Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 9, and today I'm going to be breaking down last night's game between Nashville and Inter Miami. It was a dramatic game in Inter Miami's first ever CONCACAF Champions Cup match, and today I'll be breaking it down. It will be just me today. Soar is busy with a full life and is not going to be available tonight or tomorrow. So I'm going to be running this one all by myself. And then he'll be back on Sunday for our pregame of the Montreal game. Speaking of that pregame, one thing I did want to mention in this podcast is our plans moving forward and something we want to try out. One of the things that I've noticed over the last couple weeks and the last couple months is that Inter Miami will release the lineup about an hour before kickoff. And I've always felt like that hour needs some Inter Miami action that I can grab in, you know, get into, because there's no pregame show and I'm ready for the pregame show. My mind is on Inter Miami. I'm thinking about Inter Miami and there's just nothing available in terms of content to take in at that point in time. So me and Soar, we want to try and be that entertainment for the hour before games start. And so we decided we're going to try to do our pregame show before, in the hour before kickoff. So basically, once the lineups get released, we'll talk about the lineups and we'll do our regular pregame show. And we hope that you guys will join us and get in the comment section, and it can become kind of a community thing, a pregame show for Inter Miami fans. With that said, let's get straight into the game. There's a few quick hitters that we'll get to at the end, but for the most part, this is probably going to be a little bit of a shorter episode because it's just me, and Soar will probably give us his thoughts on the game a little bit on Sunday. But for now, let's just get right into it. The lineup came out about an hour before kickoff, and we found out that it was going to be a 3-5-2. This is something that Soren and I talked about in the pregame episode, in the preview episode, because once Yedlin got traded, there was no obvious right back candidate to replace him on the roster. I know that there was some speculation that Julian Gressel would play there. Tata Martino didn't really give us a sense that that was possible in his comments over the course of the week. And so I felt that we were going to go with the 3-5-2, and that was sort of the obvious option based on the personnel available and based on the fact that Inter Miami didn't replace DeAndre Yedlin this week. That move for Yedlin sort of dictated the fact that we were going to have to play in this formation and sort of with this style. We saw it in the preseason that we weren't very comfortable in a 3-5-2. We played it in Saudi Arabia and we gave up 10 goals in 2 games. So it was something that we saw. The midfield wasn't good at covering for. The three center backs weren't particularly comfortable and organized in a back line of three. And that our fullbacks, or rather our wing backs, are so aggressive and they push up so far by design that they can't actually help defensively, especially in those transition opportunities where Inter Miami is already sort of weaker. That was sort of my biggest concern going into this game, but I felt that Tata Martino sort of had to pick this 3-5-2 based on the personnel. Other than Israel Boatwright, we didn't see anyone play the right back spot other than DeAndre Yedlin either this year so far or in the preseason. And really even heading back towards last season, we may have gotten a cameo from David Ruiz. We may have gotten a cameo from Robert Taylor, but the drop-off was so stark that I think it made sense to, especially in a big game like this, not put out a Robert Taylor at a right back spot or even an Israel Boatwright, even though he's comfortable in that spot. It didn't make a lot of sense for this to be his first ever start for Inter Miami. The other thing we saw was Federico Redondo. This is his first game available, and this was his first game starting for Tata Martino. I wasn't surprised by this, and Soar wasn't either, because we've seen Tata Martino over the last 8 or 9 months. When he has a player coming back from injury, when he has a new signing, he's really not afraid to just throw them into the starting lineup and just see how it goes for them. Last season, and the one that really stuck out to me was in the U.S. Open Cup semifinal, he threw John Mota in there for the first half when John Mota was coming back from that injury. He just let him go for 45 minutes to see where he was at. He had no problem doing that. He did the same thing in his first game with Lawson Sunderland. I believe he did the same thing with Diego Gomez after Gomez had about a month off from injury. So he's very comfortable just throwing guys out there, and especially new guys, new signings, especially guys that, you know, are really well thought of, and just letting them play out and see how it goes, especially for a first half. So I think seeing Redondo in that midfield wasn't a surprise. And when you put all these pieces together, I think going with that 3-5-2 made sense because you could just push Gressel to that right wing back and keep most of the same guys that have been playing for the first three games in your starting lineup. The one omission that I think a lot of fans were curious about was Robert Taylor. I did want to spend some time talking about him because, and we saw this in the preseason, at least in Tata Martino's mind, he does not fit into this 3-5-2 system. And it makes sense because his best position is as a left winger. And his second best position is as a right winger in a 4-3-3. He probably could play a little wing back, but he's really not that great defensively. For a winger, he's okay, but for someone that's supposed to have defensive duties, he doesn't do very well. And then in the midfield, I mean, you have so many better options that it just doesn't make sense to put him there. So I think moving forward, when we see a 3-5-2, Robert Taylor is going to be a sort of a minimal part of that, maybe a bench option, but for the most part, he's going to be a guy that doesn't get a lot of minutes in that formation. And then lastly, Jordi Alba obviously has been dealing with a cold or a flu over the last couple of days, and he didn't make the trip and clearly wasn't available for this game. So no Allen stepped in. I don't think that really had a big impact on how they were going to play or the formation or anything like that, but just a like-for-like substitute where obviously it's a drop in quality when you take Jordi Alba off the field, but it's not the sort of – it doesn't change your tactical setup very much. So with that said, let's get into the big moments. I sort of in the pregame and in the preview episode, I sort of thought there was a chance that Inter Miami might get off to a really hot start. We saw that in the game against Orlando over the weekend where Inter Miami scored in the first couple minutes. And I think that really stunned Orlando and kind of opened the floodgates for what Inter Miami eventually did. I thought there was a chance that Inter Miami would do the same thing in this game where they would kind of go on the road, get a quick goal and sort of stun Nashville and make this an easier game for themselves. The exact opposite happened. Jacob Schaffelberg scores a goal in the fourth minute. I think this was just sort of everything that we were worried about with this 3-5-2. I know I just spent a good few minutes there talking about why the 3-5-2 made sense, but and I'll spend some more time later on talking about why it doesn't work. But one of the biggest concerns was that back line's not very organized and the midfield doesn't protect them very well. So that was like the big circle this on the team sheet when we saw that it was going to be a 3-5-2. And it came to fruition. Right away. So like I said, fourth minute, Jacob Schaffelberg gets the goal. There was some poor defense. Christoph gets caught up the field trying to make a tackle, and then he gets caught out of position. Federico Redondo isn't really ready for the athleticism of the midfielder who makes the final pass, and then Jacob Schaffelberg gets the ball sort of wide open inside the penalty box and just fires it past Drake Callender. Nothing Callender could have done. It was a play that the back three needed to handle better. And it was early in the game, so they hadn't had a lot of time to sort of get comfortable, but this is why you don't change your formation in the, you know, to start an important game, because the back line's not comfortable right away. And then you can allow a goal like this when you never really should have. I'm going to talk about Federico Redondo a little bit more later on in the podcast, but I also felt he could have done a little bit better on this play. And I think that it was a symptom of what I was nervous about with Redondo and why I felt like this might not be the best moment to put him in personally, although I did think Tata was going to. I think the next moment that's really worth talking about is in the 26th-ish minute. I tried to get a full game highlight to, or a full game rewatch to sort of rewatch this game, but I wasn't able to. I think it's blocked by Fox in the US. So I haven't been able to rewatch the game. What I will say, sorry, this 26th minute is when Federico Redondo is given the yellow card for this elbow on Jacob Schaffelberg. I know there's a lot of outcry that this should have been a red card, that, you know, this was way beyond, you know, what's acceptable in our game. But here's what I'll say. And I think this was for both Nashville and for Inter Miami, a rude welcoming to CONCACAF soccer. It is a different beast. These are not the same refs as you see in the MLS. These aren't even the same refs you see in Leagues Cup. And so for Inter Miami fans, this was a sign that cheap fouls aren't going to get called and heavy fouls are going to be yellow cards and not red cards. I know there was a questionable, you know, there was a play later in the game that could have been a red card on, I believe, McNaughton when he stepped on Messi's calf. But for me in the MLS, that was definitely a red card, or at least by the rules of the game, that's definitely a red card. By the MLS standards, it's very likely a red card. And by CONCACAF standards, I'm not even surprised at all that it wasn't a red card and that they didn't spend too much time looking at it, because this is a very physical, very, this is a confederation that will allow a lot of fouls to go on, and you're not going to get calls, you're not going to get cheap stuff. And so for Inter Miami fans, I think that's important to just understand that that's going to happen, and that's going to be the case for the rest of our run in this tournament. There's a couple other moments I want to talk about from this first half, but I think maybe I'll save them for a little bit later. They both have to do with Noah Allen. Actually, the one other moment I should probably bring up is in the 37th minute. This is when the ball sort of lands at Messi's feet, sort of at the edge of the penalty box, and he has Luis Suarez on his left and Julian Gressel on his right, and only one defender. And it seemed like a great opportunity for Inter Miami. He takes it himself, and he tries to make the play, you know, without passing it, and he sort of messes it up and sort of lets that opportunity go to waste. Walker Zimmerman has a nice recovery, but they didn't really ever they didn't make the most of that opportunity, and so that was sort of a disappointing moment. And that sort of leads Inter Miami into halftime, where they're down 1-0. They've had a decent percentage of the ball. They've sort of, you know, they had a few, they gave up a few transition opportunities to Nashville, but for the most part, they weren't too, or at least by the end of the half, they had sort of calmed things down. They felt in control and comfortable on the ball, but they weren't really pressing and poking for opportunities. And that's sort of where we were at halftime. Going into the second half, I was hoping we would get a change in formation. Like I had mentioned earlier in the game, earlier in this podcast, I have seen Tata throw guys out there for their first game and sort of give them 45 minutes and then take them off at halftime if he didn't feel like they were entirely up to it. And that's exactly what happened with John Mota and Lawson Sunderland last year. And so I wouldn't have been surprised if he had taken Redondo off, especially because he had already gotten a yellow card. and especially because that would have been an impetus to switch formations to a 4-3-3, where Inter Miami's backline I felt would have been a lot more comfortable. But that didn't happen, and Inter Miami paid for it almost immediately. Jacob Schaffelberg, again, sort of finds that space between Julian Gressel and Toto Aviles in that sort of left flank. And I want to give him credit because he has a great shot. It's not something Callender could have done anything about. Sometimes you just get beat by a player making a great play. But at the same time, it's hard to not think about the formation. It's hard to not think about Inter Miami not feeling comfortable. None of the defenders step up to it. None of the midfielders sort of get in the way either. And so while there was definitely disorganization along the back line, no one knew to step up. No one knew who was supposed to step up to Schaffelberg as he sort of cut in and prepared to take the shot. But at the same time, it was a good shot from Schaffelberg, and I don't want to take that away from him because it wasn't an easy chance. He finished it with a lot of quality and something that we haven't seen a lot from Schaffelberg. And at this point, I am pretty concerned. I felt like Inter Miami was always going to sort of bring this game under their control as long as they didn't let Nashville continuously beat them in transition and on the counter and sort of in those wide spaces that Inter Miami's really struggled to defend. It felt in the second half of the first half that they were sort of getting there. They felt a little bit more comfortable on the ball. They were holding possession. They were letting their fullbacks get up. They started to play what I would call Inter Miami ball, where they were following their game plan and holding Nashville down for at least that last 20 minutes of the first half. So to see a second goal go through immediately after halftime, that was pretty deflating. And it was the first time where I felt like, oh, okay, this might not go as well for Inter Miami as maybe we all thought it was going to go, or maybe as we all hoped. I know both Sora and I talked about how this Nashville team, especially without Sam Surridge, even with Hani Mukhtar, probably is only good for one goal. And so for them to put two on the board, that was very concerning. With that said, I did love the response from Inter Miami after that second goal happens. And it's only a few minutes later that they break onto the scoring sheet themselves. It was the 52nd minute. Nico Freire has the ball. He sort of pushes it into the box to Diego Gomez, who lays it off for Luis Suarez, who then finds Messi. And Messi, in a tight spot, sort of gets off a really impressive shot without a lot of runway. And listen, that's just a Lionel Messi goal, curls it around the goalkeeper, puts Miami back into this game, puts them back into the tie. I mean, this felt like it might be getting away from Inter Miami before they really even got into this tournament. And so that was sort of a moment where you needed your best player to step up, make a great play, and that's exactly what Lionel Messi did. So that was really encouraging to see, and it felt like the momentum was shifting to Inter Miami, and that was sort of the first shot for Inter Miami that was going to follow up with an Inter Miami burst of momentum. Five minutes later, that led to Inter Miami's second goal, which came from Julian Gressel with a great cross into Diego Gomez, who sort of attacked the back line and put in the back of the net the 57th minute. That was called off for offsides. I did want to sort of make note of it because it was another good cross from Julian Gressel. And we're starting to see that from that right side. If he can get into that final 18 yards, he can whip in some really good crosses that can result in excellent opportunities. And again, and the other thing is Diego Gomez, he's attacking from the midfield. He's getting beyond Messi and Suarez leading that front line and trying to make plays at the spear point of the attack. And he's not afraid to come out of the midfield to do that. So two good things to notice, or two good things to see from this team. They didn't involve either Suarez or Messi. And so there's production out there. And I know this goal didn't count, but those are two things that I personally made note of and I like to see. And then just staying on side is the type of, you know, awareness thing that's going to come with more experience for Diego Gomez. Then the other thing is, at this point, I felt like Inter Miami had a ton of momentum and that they were going to make a, they were going to make this comeback happen. Basically, from this, you know, as soon as Jacob Schaffelberg got that second goal for Nashville, it felt like Inter Miami was just sort of in control of this game. And then it came with the goal for Messi, a second goal for Gomez, which was called offsides, but they were attacking. They felt like they were sort of poking and prodding into Nashville's defense, and sort of they were in control of the game. And it felt like it continued that way for another 15 or so minutes after that play, until about the 72nd or 73rd minute. I think there was an injury and sort of there was a pause that sort of cut into Miami's momentum, and Nashville, which they're good at, sort of sat on the ball, dragged things out. Every ball that went out of bounds took a little longer to get back into it. Every time the goalkeeper got his hands on the ball, he held it on for a little longer, sort of taking the momentum out of the game. And I think Nashville did that really well, starting around the 70th minute, 72nd minute, until that Shaq Moore goal in the 83rd minute where, and I'll describe it in a second, but he sort of, well, he gets a third goal for Nashville and the fans go crazy. And it's a scary moment for me. It's a scary moment for Inter Miami. I was, at this point, I was really nervous because it did feel like Inter Miami had sort of worked hard to get some momentum and that Nashville had sort of stamped that out of the game, and that Inter Miami was struggling to create opportunities over the course of the, sort of the 10 minutes that came before this. For that specific play, Sergei Kristoff kind of gets dragged way out wide and Nashville sort of unclogs the middle of the pitch. And again, this sort of goes back to this 3-5-2 where the three center backs don't have the greatest chemistry, the best understanding of where each other needs to be, and sort of they don't have a great set of organization in that setup. And I think Shaq Moore took advantage of that. There was a lot of space sort of as you got into that sort of towards the penalty spot. And Nicolas Freire took a step towards him. Maybe it wasn't the best step. He probably should have stepped more towards the ball carrier. Shaq Moore sort of just takes one extra step or one extra touch and sort of fires a pass Callander. Nothing really that either of there's nothing really Callander could have done. And ultimately, Inter Miami gets bailed out by the offsides. But I don't want to give the offsides too much credit because that is a terrible goal to give up. It was completely on the back line to handle that better. Kristoff out of position. Freire doesn't make a great step up. It's really tough to give up a goal like that, especially in a moment like this. And especially because, you know, for as far as everyone knew, that was going to be 3-1 Nashville for a team that we thought might struggle to even get one goal. And then, you know, taking a 2-goal advantage back to South Florida. Now you're talking about a really big hill to climb for Inter Miami back at Chase Stadium next week. And so that was really scary. And it was just based on disorganization and poor defensive play. And so, that was scary. But I think it may have sort of breathed some life back into Miami, who felt for the, you know, 10 or 12 minutes before that they were sort of had the energy sucked out of them. And then the last big moment, of course, is the game tying goal in the 95th minute. Lawson Sunderland, who had just come on, sort of plays it wide to Busquets. Then Busquets crosses it into Luis Suarez, who has a sort of easy header that he's done a lot of, a lot. We would have called it Messi magic if it was Messi. So I think we have to call this, you know, Suarez sorcery or something to that nature. On that play, Sergio Busquets is in a position that he normally probably wouldn't be in, sort of in the front line to the side where he's in a position to make a cross. If it's not into injury time, I don't think he's in that position. And more importantly, Shaq Moore sort of steps up and leaves Luis Suarez wide open for the header. That is Shaq Moore's man. He takes sort of a step forward as you watch the replay, sort of taking himself out of position to make the play. And then, well, there's nothing he can do. And Luis Suarez has the class to put that away. And so good goal from Luis Suarez, good pass from Sergio Busquets. I mean, all around a well-taken goal. Shaq Moore should have done better, but it does give Inter Miami a 2-2 draw, and the game ended shortly after that. And it was just a big moment for Inter Miami for this tie. And while we shouldn't be surprised that Luis Suarez scored a goal like this in this game, it is going to end up playing a big role. Okay, moving on to Nashville, because I did want to make a few notes about, or you know, talk about Nashville a little bit. We saw Hany Mukhtar play, who is generally their 10. He's their best player, but he generally plays as a 10 at the top of a midfield. Today we saw him as sort of a withdrawn striker. And again, when I saw that, I thought to myself, okay, this is not a team that's preparing to score a lot of goals in this game. And so that sort of added to the frustration of giving up a few goals to them. I think Nashville went into this game trying to get a 1-0 victory or a 0-0 draw where they could kind of nick it on away goals next week. And so 2-2 draw at home was not really in their plans, but that's where they found themselves. I don't think Hany Mukhtar had a huge impact on this game. I know he had a shot in about the 11th minute that, you know, it's from outside the box and Callander kind of saves it pretty easily. But other than that, you know, he wasn't a dominating force like we've seen him. He hasn't played a lot this season. And so it makes sense that he's still getting into form. And I think most of all, it's important for Nashville that they have him for next week because they're going to need him if they're going to want to win this tie. The biggest player, though, for them was Jacob Schaffelberg. Obviously, he has 2 goals. And I'm going to talk about why this 3-5-2 for Inter Miami was bad, particularly for this game. But we identified Jacob Schaffelberg in the preview show as the one player that at least I was most afraid of in this game because he has that pace in behind, because I felt Inter Miami was going to play this 3-5-2. He doesn't generally have a lot of production, but he can hit it hard and he can run really fast and get into dangerous spots. Like we talked about in the preview, they sort of swapped out Fafa Biko for Tyler Boyd. And so I actually wasn't worried about Tyler Boyd because he's just not that same style. But Jacob Schaffelberg is a burner. He can cut in, he can fire a shot. And listen, he used that speed and his, you know, awareness to get into good spots two times in this game in order to put the ball in the back of the net. And, you know, the first one is sort of an easier chance. The second one has a little more class to it. And so bravo to him, but it's frustrating that this was sort of the obvious player to be worried about. And we still lost to him, or at least gave up 2 goals to him. So that's frustrating, especially because it was so clear, but well, here we are. And then the last thing I want to talk about as far as Nashville is that back line. And this will sort of transition us to talk about Inter Miami. Nashville's back line, Walker Zimmerman, Lucas McNaughton, Daniel Lovitz, Jack Mayer, when he comes in, they've been together for a long time. They've played a lot of soccer together in a defensive system. They're very organized. They stay very tight. They have great communication. And I think this makes them sort of Inter Miami's kryptonite as far as keeping Lionel Messi in check. Of course, that's impossible. And as we saw today, he got a goal. As we saw last season, he got a goal in the first half of the League's Cup final. But clogging the center of the pitch defensively and not having any players for Inter Miami to spread them out is always going to be a challenge. And so, and when you're relying on Lionel Messi to make those plays, it's going to be tough when you have a really organized defense that, you know, they played a lot of ball together and they're good defenders. So that's tough. And I just want to give them a little bit of credit because I don't think every team in the league is going to have defenders that are that well drilled and have that great of communication. And Walker Zimmerman is, you know, one of the best defenders in the league. To me, you know, switching over to Inter Miami, the trick to breaking them down is to spread out that back line. And I'll add Shaq Moore to that because their back four is solid defensively, but they're well drilled. And so the trick is you have to spread them out wide so that Lionel Messi can create space up the middle to be effective. And that's why that's one of the reasons why I was really worried about this 3-5-2 going into this specific game. Because, you know, like going back to last weekend, we saw Orlando City, their back line was very wide and it allowed us to attack quickly in transition and just have the efficiency to just punish them because their fullbacks were playing so high up and so far towards the sidelines that it was just easy to pick through them. That wasn't going to be the case with this Nashville team. And so only having two players on the front line makes that even worse. And that's why I would have rather had a 4-3-3 with Robert Taylor because Robert Taylor can play really wide and still be a threat to cut in or to sort of let the overlapping runner play, you know, go past him and then cross it in. So you kind of have to go out there and guard him. And that spreads the back line of Nashville out a little bit more. And it allows Messi and, you know, Suarez and the midfielders, maybe not Gressel, but Diego Gomez, a little bit more space in the middle of the park. And that's where we can be the most effective. I know that Tata Martino likes to rely on the fullbacks or wingbacks to create that width. But the problem with that is that, yes, whether it's Jordi Alba or Noah Allen, yes, Julian Gressel will get space open in the wide areas. But if Nashville's defense is clogging up the middle, those players don't have anyone to cross it into. And so, and they don't have the individual skill to be a goal threat on their own, at least for the most part. And so, yes, you can get the ball into wide areas, but you're just crossing it into traffic. And, you know, Suarez, even though he did get a header goal on a cross today, isn't going to be a guy that's going to leap over people for balls, and neither is Messi. So, you know, maybe that'll work better with Campana on the pitch, but for now, or at least in a game where, you know, like this, where you have Suarez and Messi up top, it's not exactly what you're looking for. And yes, Messi likes to sort of come back to the ball and take a shot, especially if he's getting the ball from that left wing back spot. You know, we see it with Jordi Alba so much. And we saw it today with Noah Allen. It's so clogged there that it's really difficult for them. And, you know, even though Messi did get a goal from the center of the pitch, it's like a magnificent goal. And so you're not going to be able to rely on that, even with Lionel Messi, on a game in and game out basis. And when you have games like this that every goal counts, that's really tough. My other criticisms of the 3-5-2, defensively, you know, we've already talked a lot about how the back three aren't the most well organized. They don't communicate the best. They're not well drilled in this tactical setup. And so they're going to make mistakes. That's pretty clear. But the other thing is your wingbacks in our setup, in our system, they get so far forward that it's really difficult for them to help defensively, especially in transition when, you know, when the opponent gets transition opportunities. But that's even made further clear when one of those wingbacks is Julian Gressel, who doesn't have the athleticism to play sideline to sideline or, you know, play the whole pitch. So like even a guy like DeAndre Yedlin, sure, he's not the best defensively. Sure, he might not offer as much offensively as Julian Gressel, but he has the athleticism to be a problem for wingers trying to play in transition, and he can at least occupy those spaces. I'm not trying to defend Yedlin here, but it's just like that profile of player might actually be more helpful defensively in this setup, and we just don't have that. And especially on that right side for us, left side for Nashville, Jacob Schaffelberg, again, was their big threat. And Julian Gressel was never going to be able to cover him, ever. Like, Gressel's not athletic enough to do that. He's not a defensive player like that. He was never going to be able to cover him. And so you're asking Toto Aviles, who's not really ever played as a right back, at least for Inter Miami, to really cover a large part of the field. And even though he has the athleticism and tools to do that, he doesn't have a lot of experience to do it. And so you're going to see mistakes. And we did see that a few times in this game. And then as far as the midfield in this 3-5-2, you can sort of cover up those mistakes defensively because you can have your defensive midfielders cover for your wingbacks and sort of make sure that you can cut off those transition opportunities from the start. But Busquets doesn't have the legs for that. We were hoping Redondo would be the solution to that, but listen, Redondo hasn't played with this team a lot. I think throughout this game, he did get better at doing that, especially in the second half. He was covering for those wingbacks a little bit more, but he was sort of not prepared to do that, especially from the opening kick. And we saw that in Nashville's first goal was that he wasn't back there to defend for Julian Gressel. And by the way, I don't know if that's his responsibility or that was his responsibility early in the game. Like I said, haven't been able to rewatch it, but it felt like he wasn't ready for that. He hasn't spent a lot of time with the team. He doesn't, you know, there's plenty of reasons for that. And I'm actually going to speak more on Redondo in a little bit, but it just didn't happen for this game. And if that's Busquets' responsibility, then that's even worse because Busquets definitely doesn't have the legs to cover for, you know, Julian Gressel on in that sort of spot. So that's my concern in the midfield is that maybe they can cover up your defensive deficiencies, but from a personnel perspective, we didn't have the right personnel or, you know, we didn't game plan for that effectively. So that's sort of my general team discussion. I know that was mostly just why I didn't like the 3-5-2 and why I specifically didn't like it for this game. But, you know, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, I think it was the obvious choice, and I hope we never do it again, especially next week when we play these guys again. Moving on to individual players, and, you know, Sor's not here, so I'm not going to do our sort of fun awards, but I will give out the man of the match for Inter Miami. I do think Jacob Schaffelberg is the overall man of the match, but for Miami, I think I'm going to give it to Luis Suarez. He had a goal, he had an assist, so that makes it easy to give it to him, and I just want to take this opportunity to talk about him for a little bit because throughout the preseason, a lot of people thought he was done. And, you know, I know he had the big game against Orlando last week, but he, you know, people talked about how it could be a fluke or whatever. This guy is the real deal. He is going to set up his teammates. He might break Inter Miami's assist record this season, which is only 13 for, I think Robert Taylor owns the record in Inter Miami history with 13. Suarez already has 4 this year. And maybe I can double check on that in a second. But Suarez, he's really good. He's really smart. And so even though he doesn't have the legs, you can tell he understands what he's doing. And it was always a matter of time of just figuring out what his best role with this team was going to be. And he absolutely has seemingly found that. Just to check on Suarez real quick. Suarez, 4 assists. And by the way, add that to 3 goals. That's 7 goal contributions. His per 90 numbers is 2 goal contributions per 90 so far in Inter Miami's first 4 games. So, I mean, he's been incredible. He's been better than Messi so far, at least in terms of output. And I actually think he's probably played better than Messi so far in the first 4 games, which isn't something I thought I was going to say. And I don't know if it'll necessarily continue, but worth shouting out. Our next award is the Heron That Flew North. I should probably look at who might be deserving of this award. This is the award we give to the player that we felt wasn't doing the right things and sort of, you know, herons don't fly north for the winter. And so this award is sort of our player that wasn't doing what they were supposed to be doing. I think that it has to go to one of the center backs. Freire and Aviles both had a couple nice recoveries. I'm going to give it to Kristoff. He got himself out of position for Jacob Schaffelberg's first goal. I'm trying to think of where he was on the second goal, but he also got himself out of position for Shaq Moore's goal. So I'm going to give it to Serhii Kristoff. Not a great game from the back line in general, but it's just going to be tough when you're starting a new formation, and you know we've seen what Kristoff is, and so I don't want to be down on him too much. And actually, I do have one nice thing to say about him. But I think for this game, it had to be one of the defenders. I don't think Drake Callender was really at fault for any of the goals, and so. I'm going to give it to Kristoff. The one nice thing I want to say about Kristoff, if you'll give me a second to look this up. Last season, he missed 3 games. He was available. He was pretty good about being available last season. But he did miss 3 games, May 9th against Charleston Battery, May 13th against the Revs, and then May 17th against Nashville. He missed 3 games with, I think, a knee injury. And here's what I want to say. I think he looks a step more athletic this year than he did last year. And I'm sort of thinking back to before that knee injury, and I'm wondering if that sort of hobbled him for the rest of the season, because I do think he's picked up a little bit of a step this season. He's just a little bit quicker. Not that that has played out into a more effective play so far, but just something I want to keep an eye on. And I wonder if that knee injury last season sort of, like, I'm trying to remember before that knee injury if I felt he was a little bit more athletic. But I'd have to go back and watch some of the film from before that. And I'm not going to do that on this podcast. So he's the heron that flew north. Again, like, it's just that really is the whole back line. Julian Gressel wasn't great at tracking back, but it's not his game, so it's hard to blame him for that. So that's where we are with that one. Normally now we would do our special awards. Me and Sol would both give out 2 awards each. I'm going to skip that because there's not much of a guessing game if it's just me. But there are a few other players I wanted to talk about. The first is Noah Allen. Allen sort of gets thrown into the starting lineup when Jordi Alba is missing. I saw some people talk about how Allen played poorly, and I just want to challenge that. I thought he played really well for what he is. We haven't seen him play a lot of wingback fullback this preseason or this season. We've seen him play, you know, it's clear Tata wants to put him on the depth chart for center backs, but he was good. He was good. I just want to say that he was good. And I think he has learned from Jordi Alba and Lionel Messi over the course of the last, since those two arrived. And I think that was clear in there was a play in the 13th minute where I immediately thought to myself, okay, Allen's improving, and it's because of these players. And it was in the 13th minute. Suarez sort of passes it wide to Noah Allen. And then Noah Allen, instead of just lobbing it in, he sort of finds Lionel Messi making that classic cut back at the edge of the box, and he finds him, and Messi gets a perfect shot off. Let me rephrase that. The pass is perfect from Noah Allen. Messi gets the shot off. He puts it just wide. It's not a goal, so it's an easy play to forget. But it was Noah Allen not just launching it in, but looking up, finding the pinpoint pass, and not just any pass, but that special cutback that not every player has, but Messi does, and he found it perfectly. Noah Allen also put in a ball. That play where Messi in the first half had an opportunity, and then he had Suarez on his left and Julian Gressel on his right. That play started when Noah Allen put a ball into Messi over like six Nashville players. So just a couple of good moments from Noah Allen that, you know, we saw him have a few good moments last season, but we haven't seen him play a lot of, you know, wing back or left back this season. And so it was good to see that he could do that and that he's improving and that he's making progress and he's learning from these great players that are now on his team. I wanted to talk about Sergio Busquets. One of the things that we've sort of been a running theme on this podcast is that Sergio Busquets this season has been turning the ball over in sort of just because he's not been paying attention or sort of they're just dumb turnovers. And we were wondering when that was going to stop, or if he was going to work out of that. I know he had one sort of turnover like that today, but I do believe it was in Nashville's half. It didn't lead to a transition opportunity for Nashville. And so I do think Busquets might be getting a little bit better, and it might just be, you know, getting some minutes in his legs and getting that game atmosphere and sort of locking in. And so I do think we saw a step in the right direction from that. He also had the assist, so worthy of shouting out. And then the last player is Federico Redondo. This was his debut. Both Sora and I thought that he was going to be a starter in this game, and that's exactly what happened. Since we signed him, one of the things that I've mentioned and sort of wanted to put on people's radar is that he is a technical player with good tactical acumen playing in the Argentine League, which is not the most athletic. And so one of the things I'm looking for when players come from the Argentine League is how fast they adapt to the athleticism in MLS, especially if they're not players that had a lot of athleticism they're just not players that their profile is built on athleticism. Excuse me. Which Redondo is not. He's really good on the ball. He's going to make smart passes. He's going to make good decisions. But the speed of the game and how fast players are moving is going to be something he needs to adjust to. And he's not going to be able to rely on his athleticism to make that adjustment. He's going to have to be smarter and position himself better and, you know, all those things. And I think we saw that play out in the first goal for Nashville, where I think if this is Federico Redondo in 3 months, he understands he needs to be a little bit farther back, and he actually stops that ball. I think it was maybe Godoy, maybe Shaq Moore, who sort of, before they make the final pass to Schaffelberg, Redondo has a chance to make a tackle and strip the ball, and he doesn't. And I think that was because he's not used to the athleticism in this league. And so one of the things I was looking out for with Redondo was how long it would take him to make that transition. He also had some turnovers in the first half. He obviously had that elbow that we talked about earlier to Schaffelberg. He had some turnovers. He had some plays where he didn't look like he knew where he was supposed to go. I actually didn't think he looked that great in the first half. I wouldn't have been surprised if Tata took him off at halftime, especially because he already had the yellow card. If it was part of a tactical change, a change in the way they set up, because I didn't think he looked great. You can see the tools. He can make really nice passes. He's good on the ball. But I want to give him credit because I thought in the second half he was much better. Much better. Like you could, and even probably in the last 15 minutes of that first half, you could see him growing and adjusting to the speed of play sort of in front of our eyes. And so I was worried that this was going to be something that took him 6 weeks. And instead it's taken him, 30 minutes. We'll see if that continues. Maybe it was just, the emotions that I don't know. I don't want to make any promises. He's still a young player. He's still going to have his ups and downs, but it was really good to see him make some of those adjustments as we went into, as the game was going on. And then the other adjustment I saw him make, and I am imagining this is was a halftime adjustment, but he started covering for Julian Gressel on that right side, in especially in transition moments. So that was good to see. Overall, I'm happy with his debut. I think calling it a tremendous debut was probably a little over the top. I thought he got better as the game went on. And so it was a good debut, and I'm looking forward to seeing him more. And I'm happy that we have this sort of glut of midfielders that are all guys I'm excited about. I mean, now that John Mota is off the team, I'm looking at the depth chart, and it's just guys you feel comfortable with. I mean, Busquets and Redondo and Gressel and Diego Gomez, David Ruiz, Benjamin Kramaski. I mean, that is six midfielders that I would feel comfortable putting in there. And just, you know, Yannick Bright is eventually going to be a guy on there. So that feels good to have those midfield options. I don't even know how they're going to play in a 3-5-2. I'd have to think about that more, but it was good to see Redondo get his feet wet, and we move on. The final score, 2-2. Inter Miami gets two away goals, so it's actually a good result on paper. They're gonna come home. They're gonna play a weekend game against Montreal, and then next Wednesday we'll get the second leg. Inter Miami with a 0-0 draw advances, a 1-1 draw advances. If they win the game, they advance. So Inter Miami's in a really good spot. Especially at home where they played really well, seven goals, no goals allowed. So overall, it's hard to complain too much, but well, here we are. And I just wanted to get some of those thoughts out. I'm sure Sor will have some on Sunday, but I felt like it was good to get these thoughts out before too much time had passed. Just some quick hitters before I wrap it up. Leo Campana got a foot injury in practice on Wednesday, and it's unclear what the extent of that injury is. Hopefully it's just a one-game thing and he's ready to go. I imagine he might start on Sunday, but we'll see only if he's ready. And then the last thing, we haven't touched on the Marcelo Wiegandt rumors and Matias Rojas rumors, but well, we talked about Matias Rojas a little bit, but we're going to talk about that more moving forward, but I wanted to wait until Sora was here before we touched on it too much. Anyways, that was our Nashville podcast. We'll be back on Sunday, like I said, before the game for the hour. So please come join us on YouTube. We want to get some guys in the comments, some people in the comment section to make it sort of interactive, and then we'll preview the game. Anyways, until next time, I'm Scotty. Sora will be back next time, and we'll see you then. Have a wonderful day.